Morning, everybody. Welcome to Erevin Daf Yadalid. It's officially Pi Day in Erevin. I know we just had Pi Day about a week ago, March 14th. I recently learned it's Pi Day in the mathematical world. So it's a good way to remember today's Daf, meaning Pi is generally we round it up to about 3.14. So just remember the number is 0.14, and that's today's Daf, and that's Daf Yadalid, and okay, enough with that. I do have a couple of lines just to finish up from yesterday's Daf. Yesterday's Daf, Erevin Yud Gimel, so that was the very famous Daf of Elu Ve'elu. The Gemara talked about how you can have two opinions, Beis Sham and Beis Hillel. They could disagree with one another, and both of them are reflecting Das Torah. They both have an element of Torah to them, and it's just a question of who to follow, Elu Ve'elu. The Baskel came out, said that we follow like Beis Hillel. Okay, we listen to a Baskel, even though Gemara's elsewhere say that we don't listen to a Baskel. Tosos raised that issue. We discussed that a little bit yesterday. And we have one more little bit to finish from yesterday's Daf, and then we're going to start with today's Daf. The Gemara brought on another machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The Gemara had a previous machlokas that took 3 years for Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel to resolve. And then the Gemara brings in another machlokas, Tanur Rabbanan. We are on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. We're about 8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Shteishanu Mechze Nechluku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. There was 2.5 years where Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel were disagreeing with one another. Halal Omrim, Noch Lol Adam Shol Nivra, Yosef Mishanivra. One says that it's better that we were not born into this world now that we're here. No, it's better that we were born rather than we were not born. Now, you talk about a machlokas. I mean, generally speaking, we have machloksim that deal with halacha and practical living. And this is like a philosophical debate over here in terms of, was it better that we're not here, or better that we are here? I mean, that's philosophy. I mean, that's not philosophy. It's Torah. But I'm saying, but it's a philosophical debate. And so, generally speaking, like, not who cares, but practically speaking, what does it mean to us? Whether it's Noach Lol Adam or it's Noach Lol Adam Shelo Nivra. But, okay. And by the way, I don't have a response, meaning I don't know what the practical ramification would be, the Gamru, but here's what they decided on. Noach Lol Adam Shelo Nivra, Yostim Mishan Nivra. After 2.5 years, they finally decided, better that we're not here than we are here. Achshav Shenivra, but now that we're here, Yifashvish B'masav, Amrila Yimashvish B'masav. So, as long as we're here in this world, even though we really shouldn't be here, so what you should do is either you fashfesh, Rashi writes, you should check yourself, meaning Rashi shalsa kvar v'yivdok averos shibiyado v'yizvad v'yashuv. So look, we're here and we're going to do averos because it's called being a human in this world. So do vidui and do tshuva. That's one version of how the discussion ended. Or yamashmesh, you look at the next Rashi, kagonim ba mitzvah liyado yachshav. Yamashmesh means consideration, meaning you have a mitzvah opportunity. So now take the following into consideration. I could do the mitzvah, I cannot do the mitzvah. Doing the mitzvah has much more reward. In other words, everything has cost analysis. Doing a mitzvah has much more reward than not doing the mitzvah. So Rashi goes on to write, "Kineged scharav lo yaniach la'asos b'shul ha'hefset sharei schara asel lavo v'imbal liyado aver yachashav scharo." And the same thing with an avera, meaning if you have an avera coming onto your, you have an opportunity to do an avera, so consider. Now again, cost analysis, meaning there is a benefit for doing the avera now, but there's a greater benefit for abstaining and avoiding doing the avera. So, as long as we're here in this world, so either you fashvish b'masav, which means it's a very negative way to look at things, but we're going to sin and just let's do tshuva, or you mashmish b'masav, every time we get either to a mitzvah or an aver opportunity, do a cheshbon hanefesh, do a consideration and calculate, and you'll figure out that you'll be doing the mitzvah or you'll be avoiding the aver. Okay, back to our Mishnah, and back to our discussion of the Korah and the Lechi. So now we're going to be talking about actual dimensions of the Korah and actual dimensions of the Lechi. Al-Korah Sh'amru. Rachva Kedela Kabal Ariach. So how wide does your Korah have to be? Again, the Korah is a top horizontal beam that you put at the front of the Mavui, at the entrance of the Mavui. Could serve as a Heker, could serve as a Mechitza. The Gemara suggested one of two ways to look at the Korah, but how wide should the Korah be? So the Mishnah tells us the Korah should be enough to hold a brick. Now, not a brick, but an ariach. An ariach is a half a brick. The Mishnah says, ariach chatzi levena shel shlosha tfachim. So your standard brick in the times of the Mishnah was a levena, which were 3 tfachim, so half of that would be 1.5 tfachim. So that means then that your korah should be 1.5 tfachim wide. But then the Mishnah, of course, says something that's very confusing, which is Dayeha Varicha Filaveda Shal Shosha Tfachim, Dayeha Lakora Shiteirachva Tefach. So you know how wide your Torah could be? Your Torah could be a Tefach wide. Well, that doesn't make any sense, meaning the Mishnah just got done saying that the Torah should be able to support a 1.5 Ariach. By the way, the Ariach is the Levain of three Tefachim, the Ariach is half that, so it's 1.5. And it's okay for your Korah to be 1 Tefach wide. So we just lost a half a Tefach in transitioning from the Ariach to the actual width of the Korah. The Gemara is going to ask that question. Dayel Korah Shetei Rachva Tefach Kedela Kabel Ariach L'Rachva. Rachva Kedela Kabel Ariach, and then the Mishnah goes on to say, so width, we just got done discussing, that's in order to hold the Ariach, Ubria Kedela Kabel Ariach. And also it's got to be strong. Meaning, right, you go to Lowe's, you buy your lumber, right, I only know this because of Sukkos. So you buy your lumber, so you can get a beam that's 2x4, you can get a beam that's 1x4. So depending on the strength of what you need it for. So 1x4, I don't even think they sell 1x4, they sell 1x2. So by 2x4 they sell. But in other words, but if it's 1x2, so you know, it's pretty weak. In other words, it's going to sag, especially if it's covering a long distance, so it's going to sag. So the Mishnah says that the Korah, not only in terms of its width needs to support a Ariach, but also in strength needs to support an Ariach as well. So it's got to be strong enough where it can actually hold the Ariach. That is the Shita of the Tanakam of our Mishnah, and then we get introduced to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rachva Afa Pisha Embria. It is width, it has to be a Tefach. That's clear. But Rabbi Yehuda says, it doesn't have to actually be strong enough, meaning as long as it's able to hang from end to end of the mavoi, it doesn't have to be strong enough to hold a brick. So let's say now it's made out of straw. You made your korah out of straw. So that's, of course, very flimsy. So what we do is we look at it as if it were metal. And it's not, obviously, but we look at it as if it were metal, and so therefore it would work. Akuma, now by the way, this all seems to be a continuation of Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, meaning it would seem like the Tanakhama would disagree not only with the point we just made, but presumably on this upcoming point as well. Akuma, let's say your Korah bends. So in other words, it's not a straight Korah going from end to end, but the Korah takes a turn and comes back in, and so it bends. So Rono Sokilu Hipshuto. So we look at it as if it were straight. Meaning again, this concept of Rowan says that even though right now, Basher Husham, it's not strong enough to hold the Ariach, it's a little bit bent, and it's, we'll learn later on, it's not even over the threshold of the Mavui, it's bent outside. Nevertheless, this concept of Rowan says, well, with a little bit of, in this case, I'd say poetic license, but a little bit of interpretation, it's fine. Agula ronoso kihilu mirabas. Now, what if it's cylindrical? So now we're talking about a cylindrical korah. So normally we have this picture in our mind of a korah, at least I do, of something being rectangular in shape or square in shape. But what if it's cylindrical? So we look at it as if it were square. We square it. Kol sheyesh bekefer shoshes tefachim yesh barochav tefach. And that means then that if the circumference of the cylindrical korah is three tefachim, so that means the diameter is going to be one tefach. Okay. And obviously later on this morning we're going to talk more about the relationship between the circumference and the diameter. Okay, so we start off with the Gemara, and the Gemara's first issue, of course, is the Mishnah's math. The Mishnah's math seems to be a little bit off. It's got to be able to hold the Ariach, and the Ariach is a half of a Levena, and a Levena is three tefachim, the half of a half that would be a tefach and a half. And then the Mishnah comes to the non-logical conclusion, okay, so it's good enough for it to be a tefach. Okay, so how did that work? So the Gemara immediately jumps on that, tefach. Tefach u'mechza ba'i. So the conclusion should have been that your korah needs to be a tefach and a half. So the Gemara says, no, the Mishnah's math works as follows. It's not math. In other words, it gives us a sense of how wide the korah needs to be, but you don't need the entire korah to be supporting the entire Ariach. The Gemara goes on to explain. Came in the Rachav L'Kabal Tefach, Ida Chatzi Tefach Ma Ben Le Betina, Mashu, Mehagisa, Umashu Mehagisa, Vekaima. Look, what's going to happen is that if your Korah is exactly a Tefach wide, and you throw the Ariach on top of the Tefach, so yes, it's true, the Ariach is going to be a half a Tefach wider than your actual Korah. good. But if I center the Ariach right over the Korah, so what am I going to have? I'm going to have, remember, we only have a half tefach difference. So I'm going to take that half tefach and I'm going to divide that in half. So half a tefach, remember, we talked about this just the other day. A tefach is 4 etzbaos. A half a tefach is 2 etzbaos. So now I'm taking my Ariach and I'm putting it over my Korah. The total discrepancy is a half a tefach. So assuming you're centering it, that means it's only 1 etzba on one side, 1 etzba on the other side. The Gemara says that's not a big deal. And the Gemara says, what you'll do is you'll just simply put a little bit of cement on the one side, you put a little bit of cement on the other side, you kind of even it out. So kind of comes like an angle into your Korah, and that's fine. That's not a big deal, and that's what the Mishnah means. Amar Rav Bar Rav Huna, Korah she'amru, Tzricha she'tei bria kedei lekabel ariach, u'ma'amide Korah, einam tzricha she'yu briim kedei lekabel ariach. I'm sorry, lekabel Korah ve'ariach. Now, the Korah itself, we have in our Mishnah debate between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda. Now, in this discussion, let's assume like we're holding like the Tanakama, which is that the Korah not only in width has to be a tefach, but in strength needs to hold the Ariach. What about the Amudei HaKorah? Meaning, the Korah, you could just simply lay over the entrance of your Mavui and put one end on one side of the top of the wall and the other side on the other side of the wall. Or what you could do is you could put some sort of support system, right? Little pegs, if you will, on one side and pegs on the other side in order to hold your Korah. Does this requirement, that there has to be a strength to the Korah, does this requirement also apply to the Amudim as well? Now, obviously, the Amudim are going to support the Korah, because if they can't support the Korah, then there's nothing to talk about. In other words, but do they have to be able to support the Korah and the Ariach? The Korah has to support the Ariach. Does the Amudim have to support the Korah and the Ariach? So this becomes a point of debate.
It's probably not one brick. It's probably bricks.
Yeah, I don't know. When I'm trying to visualize as well, the Mishnah is not clear. The Mishnah keeps talking in terms of one brick. Is the Mishnah expecting us to line the whole thing with bricks? I don't know. And I also wonder that as well. In other words, correct. I was thinking also that Gemara never says this, and I'm just speculating that maybe the debate of the Mishnah is whether or not it serves as a heker, it serves as a mechitza. If it serves as a mechitza, it needs to be strong. If it serves only as a heker, so then we could use this concept of rowan. Maybe. But that, again, that's speculation. The Gemara doesn't say that. So what about the ma'amidim? So, Ariach, ma'amidim, korah, ein tzrichim, she'ibrim, kedei lekabel, korah, ve'ariach. So the first opinion, that of Rav Abba Rav Huna, is that yes, this strength requirement, the support requirement is true not only for the Korah but for the Ma'amidim as well. Sorry. No. Rav Abba Rav Huna says that this requirement is not true for the Ma'amidim. Ma'amidim Korah ein tzrichim shiyuhu briim kedei lekabel Korah ve'ariach, and Rav Chisda disagrees. Rav Chisda amar echazeh ve'echazeh, the same requirement for the Korah that it has to support a brick is true for the Ma'amide HaKorah, which is it has to support not only the Korah, but Korah plus brick. Let's say you do the following. I don't want just a Korah. You know what? Let's make it fancy. So what do? I throw the Korah over the top, and then I put a curtain over the Korah, and I let the curtain hang down. So, you know the concept of subtraction by addition? That's basically what you have over here. You lost every... Oh, and by the way, the important point which I didn't mention, which is that the curtain doesn't go all the way down to the ground. The curtain is kind of like hanging in the air, above 3 tefachim from the ground. Okay, and now you try to make your Korah nice and fancy. You lost everything. You lost your Korah, and the little curtain that you made also is fundamentally useless. The Gemara goes on to explain. Kare ein kan, mechitze ein kan. You don't have anything. Kare ein kan, daha mechze. You covered your Korah. Meaning the whole point of the Korah is that you need to see it. And now that you took a curtain and you draped it over the Korah, so you lost your Korah. So you don't have that. Meaning your Korah can't serve as a heker. And in terms of, okay, you're right, I don't have my Korah anymore. But there's a wall right there. The Gemara says that's not a wall. A wall has to drop down to the ground. A mechitza tluya, which we just spoke about a couple days ago in Daf, a hanging wall. So in terms of some halachas, we're going to call it a wall. Remember when we talked about accessing water? So we said, fine, mechitza tluya for accessing of water, that the chachamim are okay with. But generally speaking, the chachamim are not okay with a mechitza tluya. Over here, they're not okay with a mechitza tluya. So you lost everything. You lost your curry, you don't have a mechitza. Obviously, from the Gemara, it sounds pretty clear that if the curtain would drop down to the ground, so then that'd be fine. But over here, this particular case, it's hanging in the air. Tanu Rabbanan Kori HaYotzim. Right. So basically, I mean,
just because people are supposed to be trained, that whole has halakha.
Correct. In other words, once a chachamim said that korah becomes your hecker, it's the korah which is a hecker. Meaning, I find this throughout Shas. Meaning, once a chachamim give a specific definition of what a hecker is, that's it. In other words, then you can't then just simply say, well, that also serves as a hecker. Meaning, then we have to conform to what they define as a hecker. Right, I'll give you another example. Right, drinking blood. Okay, so the Gemara in Krisus says you drink fish blood, so you need a hecker so that everyone knows that you're drinking fish blood. So there the Gemara says, what's a hecker? So kuskusim, you need actual scales right there by the cup. So scales of the fish. So, and why can't you just simply have a sign saying this is fish blood? So again, there's a specific definition of what a hecker is, and that's it. Oh. Going back to your right. Okay, I hear that. I don't right. I figured that would be a further area of investigation. Tanur Rabbanan Korah Yotzim Mikosel Zuv. Ain't no gus Mikosel Zuv. Let's say I have a Korah coming out from one side of the Mavui, a Korah coming out from the other side of the Mavui. So they get close to one another, but they don't touch one another. Vechein Shtoy Korah Sachas Yotzim Mikosel Zuv Acha Yotzim Mikosel Zuv. Ain't no gus Zubazu. The first case where the beam comes out from one wall, doesn't touch the other wall. The second case is there are two beams coming out from both walls, almost coming into contact with one another, but don't quite make it. So here the rule is very simple. Love it. As long as it's within three tfachim of either the next wall or of the two beams, when nearly coming to contact with one another, as long as the distance is within three tefachim, so then you have the principle of lavud connects.
How are they going to be suspended?
Huh? I mean, obviously they're fastened very strongly from the wall. I mean, very strongly. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Pachas Midalein Tzarich Lahavi Karecheres Arba Tzarich Lahavi Karecheres. Again, we saw this earlier in the Masechta. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel also subscribes to the concept of lavud. I mean, everyone subscribes to lavud. That's a halach l'moshe Misinai. It's just a question of what the shear of lavud is. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it's for tfachim. I already noted. The Rambam writes we don't have machlokas by halach l'moshe Misinai. Here we do. Okay, I mentioned that as an issue. I didn't have a solution back then. Still don't have one. V'chein bein koras amatimos. And let's say you have twin koras. So in other words, they're running along now side by side. Your two koras. Lo bazuka de la kabal arich, lo bazuka de la kabal arich. Now, neither korah by itself is strong enough. Im makbilos arich l'rachvo tefach, ein sarach lavi korah acheres. V'im lav, sarach lahavi korah acheres. So the Tanakhama says that these twin that are running side by side, if together they can hold an ariach, so then that's fine. But if not, so then you're going to have to get a real korah. Shim Gamliel Omer, ima kabel sarich larko shlosha in sarich lahavi korah cheres. V'imla sarich lahavi korah cheres. Now Shim Gamliel says, look, if you're having twin korah, so it's not enough for the twin korah to support a half a levena, because a half a levena, meaning an ariach, is for one korah. Once you have the twin koras running down, running across your mavui, so now it has to hold a full levena. Let's go back to our case now of the twin kora. But instead of them being parallel side by side, they are one higher than the other. So now, what do we say over here? So Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Rowan. So Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda uses now the concept of Rowan, which means that we're going to use a little bit of poetic license, meaning that Rowan is Aliyona Kiilu Hilamata, Vesa Tachtona Kiilu Lamala. So we'll look at the top one as if it drops down. We'll look at the bottom one as if it comes up. They'll meet each other side by side. and perfect, and now you have a korah. The only proviso is that your upper korah cannot be above 20 amas, and your lower korah cannot be below 10 tfachim, because as we learned earlier, there are height parameters, which is 20 and 10. 20 amas height, 10 tfachim minimum height. Now Abai makes an observation. We're going to assume that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is the son of Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah. Okay, and if that's true, so he agrees with his father and he disagrees with his father. On one hand, just like his father held to the concept of Rowan back in the Mishnah, where my Korah was made out of straw, and Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah says, well, look at it as if it's metal. Rowan. So, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda also holds to this concept of Rowan, right, where one car is dropping down and one car is coming up, and even though we don't have to physically move them, but we could view it as such. So he holds to this concept of Rowan. However, but you go back now to the beginning of the Masech, the Daf Beis, what did Rabbi Yehuda say? No height requirement. No maximum height requirement of your Korah. It could be above 20 amas. This position. Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda disagrees with his father. Rav Yehuda sever lamala miyasrim. Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda sever betoch chav in lamala mechav lo. Good. So, I mean, good. Right? How can a son disagree with his father? I mean, I know it happens all the time, but obviously he learned by a different Rebbe. Rav Yehuda omer rachla afa pishay nebriya. Masila Rav Yehuda lechia bar rav kamei derav. Right? We've seen this format already early in the Masechta. Rav Yehuda is teaching Chiyar Barav a brisa in front of Rav. And the brisa reads as follows, Rachvafa Pishena Briya, that as it's wide, even if it's not strong. So Amar Lei, so when Rav hears this, it offends him. Asneya, you're not teaching it correctly. Teach it the following, Rachva Ubriya. It has to be that the car is a tefach wide, and it has to be where it's able to physically support the brick. So the Gemara says, yeah, but how do you put that together with another statement of Rav, which is that it's rachva, even though it's not, I'm sorry, if it's four tfachim wide, so then it doesn't have to support a brick. So the Gemara's answer is rachvar ba shani. No. Once your car is four tfachim wide, which is significantly wider than the minimum requirement, so then it serves as a hecker, and then does not have this requirement of it has to support bricks. But if you're only going to make your korah one tefach wide, or anywhere from one tefach up to four tefachim, so then it actually has to support bricks.
He disagrees with the Mishnah.
No, in other words, he will say, correct. Correct. In other words, I'm assuming, because the Gemara doesn't say, what about the Mishnah? I'm assuming that he's working within the Mishnah. The Mishnah's requirement of Bria is only if it's a Tefach. Once it's for Tefachim, it's like a super hacker, and so therefore you don't need it. You don't need this requirement of Bria. Right, correct. I was expecting Hedy to ask me that question, but yes. Now, Haisa Shel Kash. Now, what if your korah is made out of straw? Now, remember, this is down Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, which is Rowan. So, my Kamash Malan, Darmin and Rowan, Hainoach. So the Gemara says, I don't understand, what's the purpose of examples of the Mishnah? Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda tells us, it doesn't have to be Bria. Like, isn't that enough? Like, what do we gain from these examples? So the Gemara says, Ma'u Detema, Bimina Amrinan. Shelo Bimina Lo Amrinan. Look, if I'm going to use wood as my material, even though it's a thin piece of wood, even though it can't support a brick, but it's wood. Had it been a little bit thicker, it would have been great. So there I can entertain the idea of Rowan. But if we're talking about straw, which is fundamentally weak, meaning it doesn't matter how much straw you pile one on top of another, it will never be able to support a brick. So maybe this idea of Rowan for Rav Yehuda has limitations. So the Gemara's explanation is, that's what we gain from the example. That even though I'm using a material which is fundamentally weak, even then Rav Yehuda will use this concept of Rowan, we'll look at it as if it were metal. Kamash Malan, that's the Chiddush. Akuma Rowan Osoki Lupshuta, now we're going to have a little bend in the Korah. So the Mishnah says, that's fine. Now, it's really not clear. When I read the Mishnah at the beginning of today, of this morning, I said this is a continuation of Rav Yehuda. You could quibble, meaning it's not totally clear that that has to be Rav Yehuda, although from the Mishnah, it does seem that way. It uses the concept of Rohan there as well. So the Gemara says, Pshita kamash malan kid Rabbi Zera, damer Rabbi Zera, hi besoch hamovui v'ak mumisa chutz lamavui. He besoch esrim v'ak mumisa lamala miyasrim, hi lamala miyasara v'ak mumisa lamata miyasara, Rowan Koshilo Yinatalak Mumusav in Bala Zelaze, Shlosha Ain Sarah Lahavi Kora Acheris, the Imlav, Sarah Lahavi Kora Acheris. Let's say the Ben goes, and now we're gonna take the Ben in a couple directions. Either the Ben goes, let's say the Kora is right under 20, Amos, and the Ben goes above 20 and comes back in. So that's fine. Now by the way, when I say that's fine, I mean Reb Zera is pretty clear. Meaning obviously what we're gonna do is wherever that Ben is, we take it out, because it's above 20 Amos. And so therefore, halachically, as if it's not there, as long as now the distance between the point before each bend is within 3 tfachim of one another, we have lavan. Let's say the bend drops into 10 tfachim, that's also fine. Again, assuming that you have 3 tfachim distance between the parts that are above 10 tfachim. And let's say the bend goes outside of the mavu and comes back in, once again, that's fine. The Gemara says to all this, pretty obvious, right? Hanami pshita. He besoch mavu, vakmitzu chutz lamavui, it's rechlei. The Gemara says, I'll tell you what wasn't obvious, that it was that last point, which is where the ben goes outside the mavui. Because here, I might have considered the following. Yeah, because look, I'm looking up at the kara to tell me where the mavui ends. So if there's a ben that extends outside the mavui, so it's pretty good havamina. In other words, I might simply say, oh, okay, good. I'm following the kara. Kara takes a little bend. Good. Must be I can go out here, come back here. Good. But meanwhile, if you're following the kara, you're going to be stepping outside the mavui into the Rishos HaRabim. That's the havamina. It's a pretty good one. The Gemara says, kamash malan. No. Because it's a small bend and because the distance between the unbent part is within 3 tvachim of one another, so it's fine. Agul arona sokiilu mirubas. And here we get now to the Gemara's discussion of the relationship between circumference and diameter. Okay, before we start with the Gemara, okay, fascinating Rambam. Rambam writes the following in the Perashat Mishnayos. Now, for all you who are enjoying math, so you know that pi is what we use to describe the relationship between circumference and diameter. Okay, pi equals 2r. It always bothered me. Why did I say 2r? Why not just simply say diameter? Okay, okay, but anyway, so pi is a number. Now, pi is not a number. Pi is a Greek letter. Why do we represent it by a Greek letter? Why not represent it by a number? And the answer is, again, I'm now speaking mathematically, the answer is because it's not a number. Okay, what does that mean it's not a number? It's irrational, meaning that if we try to figure out, compute pi, so it is a decimal, follow them by numbers, with no end. Okay, and now with computers, so what they're able to do is extend, you know, and go out and find, you know, right, I looked it up yesterday. Anyway, they're able to go out for thousands and thousands of numbers after the decimal point, but it's an irrational number. So in other words, it cannot be described in with a single number, even with as many numbers as you want. Okay, 3.14, which, you know, we can go on, but 3.14 is just we're rounding it to a number. But it's not a number. The Rambam writes the following in his Perashat Mishnayos when describing the relationship between diameter and circumference. Okay, he lived a short 800 years ago. So, let me just first find it. Karsha Amru Levena Yaduhi Maraz. Yeshachal Adas. This is the Rambam in his Perashat Mishnayos. Ki yichos halachson agula ala mesavev oso b'li yadua. So he says the relationship between what he calls the alachson, which is the diameter, and the circumference is b'li yadua. It's a lack of knowledge. We don't know it. V'i'ef shar l'dabar bo la'olam. And we can't talk about it. Be'emes v'chisaron zu ha'asaga eino mi'itanu kemachshav asakad hanikra galik avo b'tavei zeh. And it's not that in other words, it's out there, but we don't know. The Rambam says no. Zedavar b'li yadua. It's an unknown. It is by nature unknown. The ain b'mitzio shiusag. In other words, it just in its reality, there is no number that describes it. This is the Rambam talking 800 years ago. So talk about being mathematically aware. Aval yodeh zeh bekarov. What we do is we give an approximation. Ukvar chibur chachmei hacheshbonos. I'm sorry, right, lezu, chaburim, leida, yichus al-chson al-mesaveh. And he says, you can look at the math books where they're going to give you some sort of approximation, but the Rambam writes there's no way of knowing the actual number because it's not a known quantity. Okay, that's the Rambam in his description of this relationship. Okay, now, we approximate. So does the Mishnah. Now, it's interesting because the Gemara is now going to ask the question, Menahani Mili. Right? That's the next words of the Gemara? Yeah. Not yet. We'll get to it in just one line. Let me read the Gemara, and then we'll make another point. Agula ro'na sakilu mirubas. Hasu lama li. So the Gemara says, why do I need this next part of the Mishnah? Sefa tzrichle. Kol sheish be'kefu gimel tvacham yesh barachav tefach. Good. The relationship between circumference and diameter, which is 3:1. And now the Gemara says, Menaha nimili. Well, where do I know this from? So, okay, it's a funny question of the Gemara. Where do I know about this relationship between circumference and diameter? It's a mathematical equation. What's the Gemara asking Menaha nimili? So, the Rush asked this question. You're not going to see this in the Rush in the back. You'll see this in the Tosos of Rush. The Rush asked this question, and basically he says like this. Again, going off the Rambam. Whatever number we give to describe the relationship is simply an approximation. Even the number that we use nowadays, right, our pi, is just simply an approximation. There really is no number. It's an irrational number. So, basically, Menaha Nimili of the Gemara is asking, what is an allowable approximation? We're going to approximate anyway, so what's an allowable approximation? And that's what the Mishnah is teaching us 3:1. Meaning, we know it's not 3, right? I mean, the Rambam writes it. I know the Rambam is after the Gemara, but let's assume. We know it's not 3. We know it's some other number. But anyway, we're going to approximate. So as long as we're asking the question, what to approximate to, how do we know, Menaha Nimili, how do we know that 3 is an allowable approximation? That's how the Tshuvas of Rush, the Tosfos of Rush understands what our discussion is about to revolve around. Menaha Nimili. I'm Rav Yochanan, Amar Kra, V'yasas Yamutzak, Eser Ba'ama, Misfaso, Ad, Sefaso, Agul Saviv, V'chamesh Ba'ama, Kamaso, V'kav Shloshim, Ba'ama, Yusuf, Oso Saviv. Okay, so we turn to Yamsho Shlomo. Now it's funny, I say Yamsho Shlomo, so what conjures up in my mind is Rav Shlomo Luria, right? That's not what we're talking about. The Yamsho Shlomo over here literally is the original Yamsho Shlomo. Shlomo HaMelech, when building the Beis HaMikdash and building his palace, so he made a large man-made lake. By the way, it sounds like it's subterranean. It sounds like from our discussion over here, actually was above ground. Anyway, the Yamsho Shlomo, right, the Lake of Shlomo, was, the Psukim describe it. It was 10 amos diameter and 30 amos circumference. Good. So what does that tell us? So again, let's go back to the Tosfos HaRush. What it tells us is that when determining what the relationship is between diameter and circumference, we can use numbers of 3:1. That's an allowable approximation. So now the Gemara says, okay, but even with this approximation, right? What about the fact that there's an edge, meaning there's a rim? Now, the answer is going to be we're measuring from the inside. But for a moment, the Gemara does not entertain that. Amar Rav Papa Sfaso, Sfas Perach Shoshan Ksiv Bey. Dichsiv Avav Tefach Sfaso, Kemase Kos Perach Shoshan Alpayim Bas Yachil. So the Gemara says, well, as Shlomo HaMelech was building up his Yamsho Shlomo, so it came to an edge. So when he got to the rim, it was really thin, right? Like a petal, like the petal of a rose. Vaik Amashu, the Gemara says, okay, I don't care how thin it is. It's still substantial. There's still substance to that rim. So then the Gemara says, okay, you're right. What we're measuring is the interior of the Yamsho Shlomo. And once again, circumference is 30 amos and the diameter is 10 amos. Tanya Rabbi Chiya, Yamsho Asar Shlomo Hayamachzik Mea V'chamishim Mikva Tahara. The Gemara quotes a tradition that we have from Rabbi Chiya, which is that the totality of this Yamsho Shlomo is 150 mikvahs. The volume of 150 mikvahs.
Since it's like almost a historical figure, what is that, like a right? Why isn't it just like a statement?
No, the his what? What
do you mean? It's like a unit of measurement, giving it approximation of a size. So why is that like a right?
Because the Bryce is telling us, no, because the Bryce is now making a relationship, meaning that the total volume of Yom Shel Shlomo is 150 mikvahs.
I understand that. Right.
The answer to your question is going to be really simple, and that is that when we do the math, which the Gemara is about to do, it doesn't compute. So based on this number that he just gave us, we're going to have to reconfigure the entire Yom Shel Shlomo. Because if it were just a simple question of, let's figure it out, you're going to see, the Gemara is going to about to show us, the numbers don't work out. Mechte, which now brings us to this next Gemara. Let's think about this. Mikvah kamahava arbaim sa. Now, a mikvah, one mikvah, is equivalent to 40 sa. Kiditanya, we learned in a braisa. Like, I feel like we've just done this in the daf. Virachat es kesaro b'mayim. The Torah says that you have to submerge in total in water. B'mayim, b'may mikvah, kol besaro, mayim shekol gufo ola b'hen. It's got to be where there's enough water where your total body could submerge in the water. The Kamehain Amal Amma Baram Shosh Amma, so it's one Amma by one Amma by three Ammas. In other words, how much water do I need in order to submerge my entire body? So we assume that the height of an average person is three Ammas. Now, okay, first of all, I remember we discussed this before. Is that including the head or is that just up to the shoulders? That's a discussion, that's a debate. But how much is an Amma? Another debate. But right now, for our purposes, let's just deal with numbers. So it's the average height of a person is three amas. The width, and I know we're not square in shape, but again, we're talking about how much water you need in order to submerge your body in total. So it's one amma by one amma. So 3 cubic amas is the amount of water that you need for a mikvah. And then the Chachamim did a little bit of conversion. All of the Kamehain, amal amma barom shosh amas v'shiyar Chachamim may mikvah arbaim sa. And that comes out to a volume measurement of, in other words, we're now converting from a linear measurement to a volume measurement. 3 cubic amas is equal to 40 sa. So, now, 40 sa makes up one mikvah. The tradition of Rabbi Chiya, how many mikvahs were in Shlomo HaMelech's Yam? 300. So now let's just do a little bit of, it's simple math, if you will. So, and oh, by the way, an important point to consider in this whole computation is that the psukim in Malachim, which we quoted on the bottom of the previous amud, said that the total contents were able to hold alpayim bat yachil. Alpayim is 2,000, bat, as we're going to learn in just a moment, is a sa'ah, so it holds 2,000 sa'ah. A bat is 3 sa'ah. So 2,000 times 3 saw, 6,000 saw. Hold that number in your head. We're going to come back to that number in just a moment. In the meantime, however, let's figure out now. So, arbaim saw kama havaluhu chamesh mar garmidei. So now, let's now figure. Chamesh mar garmidei. 500 saw. Okay, the garmidei is a saw. So letras mea. So now for 300 cubic amas, so that results now, remember, we're trying to get to 150 mikvahs. So, 150 mikvahs. So one mikvah is 3 cubic sa'ah. So 100 mikvahs is going to be, 100 mikvahs is going to be 300 cubic sa'ah. V'chamishin. And if I need now another 50 mikvahs, so I'm going to get now another. I'm sorry, v'chamishin, chamishin ba'arba, mea v'chamishin. So if I put it all together, 300, and the Gemara just breaks it up into 150. 100 mikvahs requires 300 cubic amas. 50 mikvahs requires 150 cubic amma. So 300 plus. Plus another 150, 450. So the problem is very simple. All I need now is a total of 450. So hani mili, so the Gemara says, yeah, but you start off with a false assumption. Hani mili biribua. That would be true if we're talking about a square-shaped, the Yom Shel Shlomo was square. But the ocean of the lake of Shlomo was circular. So now, could take a look at the board, my drawing of the day. So in other words, if I'm trying to inscribe a circle in a square, so the Gemara is about to tell us that it represents a quarter of the total volume of the square. So when I inscribe a circle within a square, so I'm reducing by a quarter. So the Gemara says, "Michti kamem ruba yosel agol revia la arba mea." So the Gemara says, so even if you're right now, so I'm reducing everything by a quarter. So the Gemara says that's not going to work out because mea esrim vechamisha. So now, if I'm reducing everything by a quarter, so now I've dropped to 125. There only are 125 mikvos in the Am Shel Shlomo. So, in other words, remember our dimensions. It's 10 amos in diameter, 30 amos in circumference. And again, if it were a square, it would be able to hold. It would be able to hold more than 150. So in the fact that now we're inscribing a circle within a square, so it's a quarter of that. But even a quarter of that is only 125, and now we're really off. So Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel, so now, here we go, we're going to basically have to reconfigure the entire Yom Shel Shlomo so that we can align the tradition of Rabbi Chiya, which is that Yom Shel Shlomo is able to hold 150 mikvos. So Yamsha Shama Shal Shama's Tachtona Mirubas. So basically we're gonna go like this. Now look, we already learned the height of Yamsha Shama was 5 amas high. The first three are squared. So the first three amas of Yamsha Shama are squared, Vishtai Melyona Agulos, and then a cylindrical shape on top of the next two amas are cylindrical in shape. Okay? You have the picture book, you can see it in the picture book, but basically first three amas squared, next two amas circular, good. And that yields a perfect 150 mikvos. Okay, it's very simple to figure out, meaning the first three amas are squared, so that means it is now, it's three amas high, by 10 by 10, that's 100 mikvos, right there. On top of that, now I have a circular shape of two amas. This is going to require a little bit more math. But if you do the math, you'll see that's another 50. So that gets us to 150 mikvos and Yom Shel Shlomo. Now the Gemara just wants to see if we could play around a little bit with the shape. Now we know the top is round. Because it says when you get to the rim, it's round. So the Gemara says, but why not say that it's 4 amas square and 1 amas round? So the Gemara says, Lo sakadacha dechsev alpaim bas yachil. So the Gemara says, look, based on what we just said, it also conforms to another number, which is the total volume of the Yom Shel Shlomo, which is 2,000 bat. Bat kamahavu shal shayin. Now the measurement of bat is 3 sa'a. Dechsev me'aser abas min akor dehavalei. I'm sorry, ma'aser abas min akor. Because when you take off ma'aser from akor is 30 sa'a. Ma'aser of 30 sa'a would be a bat. 10% of 30 saw is 3. So each bod equals 3 saw. Dahavale shisal pe garvaya. So, and that brings us now, so take 2,000 bot. Each bot is equal to 3 saw. That's 6,000 saw. So 6,000 saw now would be the total representation of the contents of Yom Shel Shlomo. Vahaksiv, machzik, good so far, so good. So in other words, Yom Shel Shlomo is going to be, again, squared for the first three amas up, circular for the next two amas up, totaling 150 mikvos, totaling 6,000 sa'a. Okay, again, 150 mikvos inside. Each mikvah makes up 3 by 3 by 1, linear measurement. In terms of volume, each mikvah is 40 sa'a. 40 times 150, right? So what is 40 times 150? 6,000. Perfect. Okay, so everything now relates to one another. Everything now aligns. Of course, what we needed to do is just reshape the entire mikvah of Yom Shel Shlomo, but good. V'aksiv machziv batim shloshes alafim. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is Divrei Yamim. Right? Divrei Yamim goes over all of Tanakh with discrepancy. I mean, not all of Tanakh, but it's a repetition of Navi with discrepancy. And here the discrepancy is that it says that it is 3,000 bat. Okay? That obviously is a 1,000 bat discrepancy from the way it's described in Malachim. Now, it's funny. I mean, the Gemara could have just asked this question on its own. Meaning it's an obvious discrepancy between the way it's described in Malachim versus the way it's described in Divrei Yamim. Either way, the Gemara's answer is Ha'ula Gudsha. The Gemara says, yeah, but that's Gadush, meaning that when you measure any measuring cup, if I'm measuring liquid, obviously it goes up to the rim. If I'm throwing solid in it, I can give it a heaping pile. And the Gemara is telling us, we now know from this, that when I heap dry measure on top of any liquid measuring cup, so it's going to obviously raise above. How much above is it going to raise? A third. In other words, when the Yamshar Shlomo was able to hold 6,000 bat, and if I were to put in dry measurement and heap it up, it would be able to hold 8,000 bat, which I know going up is a quarter, but okay.
Going up to third.
Yeah, correct. In other words, right. I'm in agreement, by the way. In other words, it would also depend on the width of it, and the Gemara doesn't take that into account, but I agree. Apayim bas yachil kama hava, shalsham, sorry, dechsiv, hav leshisa alpe garvide, vahaksiv, machzik, I'm sorry, hahu legutsha. I'm rabbi eishma mina haigusha tlasava. So whenever you want to try to give a relationship between liquid measurement versus the dry heaping, it's always going to be a third. V'tanana mishita teva migdal, kaveres akash v'kaveres akarnim, ubor sfina alexandrius, alfa pishyeshlem shulayim v'ein machzikos arbaim sa, balachchein kurayim b'yavish taharin. The basic point over here is that, it's a Mishnah in Kalim, is that if my kli is super big, it's not subject to tumah. What do I mean by super big? It's able to hold 40 sa liquid, and it's able to hold two core, each core is 30 saw, so two core is going to be 60 saw of dry. So, and again, you see that relationship, 40 to 60. So in other words, it's a third of dry to liquid. And to the question of who cares, meaning what difference does it make, now that we know the relationship between dry versus liquid, Rabbi Natan points out, second Tosfos on the Amud, nafkamina linya mekachu memkar, right, im hisna lasteis lo sa gedusha. Meaning in commerce, if I say to you, I'm selling you a saw of dry measurement, so now the understanding, the should be between buyer and seller, that when we're talking dry, it means that, and we say the word gedusha, it doesn't mean level, it means heaping, and now we know, what does that mean? A third above whatever the level measurement would be. Okay. Good. All right, so far so good. I don't have a minute, but I'm gonna do so anyway. It's almost impossible. It's too tempting. If you turn back the Amud and you look back at the Psukim that we quote from Malachim, so there's a comment. The credit is given to the Gra, who says this. Although, as Rabbi Kornfeld points out, you're not going to find any work. He could say this. I can't say this. You're not going to find any work of the Gra that actually says this over, but credit is given to the Gra for this. If you look back in the Psukim in Malachim, it says, "Vayasas hayam utzak etzer ba'ama misvaso atzvaso agul saviv v'chamesh ba'amaso kamaso v'kav shloshim ba'ama." The way that we have in our Gemara, v'kav shloshim ba'ama, and a line going around, which is 30 amas. If you look in the Navi itself, you'll see that what happens over here is that there's a kriuk siv. It's red, vikav, and the ksiv is kuf vav hey. So, okay, in kriuk siv, Rebbe spoke about it not that long ago, about what the nature of kriuk siv is. But in other words, it's a kriuk siv. So, what is the gematria of kav? It's 106, it's 106. What's the gematria of kava? It's 111. So, if you do the math, you'll see that the relationship between pi, what we represent as pi, between pi and 3 is not perfect, but nearly identical to the relationship between 111 and 106. You'll do the math. I did it last night, and you'll find that it goes up to 5 decimals, right? 5 decimals in, in terms of mimicking one another. The relationship between pi and 3 versus the relationship between 111 and 106. So it's reported in the name of the Gra, and a wonderful explanation of the Kriuk Siv in that Pasuk in Malachim. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we move on to the topic of Lechi. We talk about minimum dimensions of a Lechi. Continue Refuah Shlema for Binyamin Zev HaKohen, mentioned on Rivka. And for Rafal Zakai Avram Ben Yakira Avigal. Rabbi Chanan, Yemen HaKashem, Arash HaKash Baruch Hu, Zakuzal, Tzich HaChir Ben Tzor Mitzvah Shenema, Naicha Peitzaman, Tiko Yagdil Tzor Avi Adir.